Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine. And my guest this week is a woman who was predestined for Westminster. She started her political life at the ripe old age of 14, leafleting for the Labour Party with the ambition to one day become Prime Minister. And yet, she is quite possibly the least MP-type person you could ever hope to encounter in the corridors of power. Equally at home challenging the Prime Minister in the House, as she is posing in some rather dashing PVC trousers for a photo shoot, or sharing family life, girls' nights out, her latest manicure, or updates on her home renovations on Instagram. She has four tattoos, she says shit and fuck a lot in public, and refuses to be anything less than all of the things that she is, which gives her great believability, a deliciously lacking quality in British politics right now. She sits on the opposition front bench as the Shadow Minister for Domestic Violence and Safeguarding, as well as representing her constituents, writing best-selling books and hosting her own podcast, Yours Sincerely. A mother at the age of 22, she worked for the Women's Aid Federation managing refuges for victims of domestic abuse before becoming elected as a Labour councillor in 2012 and then MP for Birmingham Yardley in 2015, a seat she's held ever since. Married to Tom, a very unpolitical former lift engineer, the pair have two sons, Harry and Danny, and she lives between her family home in Birmingham and a flat in London. She lives, she says, by the Katy Perry lyric, "If you stand for nothing, you fall for everything." Jess Phillips, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. I love that. If you're going to quote anyone, don't do Boris and go all Churchill. Go Katy Perry.
She knows what's good. Either that or is it Belinda Carlisle? We dream the same dream, we want the same thing. I seem to say that a lot. I believe it's Belinda Carlisle.
Is that Circle in the Sand?
I mean,
who knows?
What greater philosopher?
So how are you? It's a Thursday afternoon. What normally are you up to on a Thursday afternoon?
Normally, I am. I've been in my constituency all day on a Thursday. I tend to be in my Birmingham office on Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. So I've been in my constituency office all day today. And normally on a Thursday afternoon, I have just got home and I am dealing with, well, only one of my children. One of them, my eldest son, he doesn't feature in my life anymore. He's off partying somewhere. I don't know where he is. He's not around me anyway. My younger son still needs to be constantly fed. I'm hungry. He's just eating like 2 bowls of pasta and he's still telling me he's hungry.
It's only cereal. Yeah, I get a lot of cereal. Yeah.
Oh my God. So that's what I tend to be doing. And then doing my podcast before I do my evening meetings. I've got an evening meeting tonight with, I think it's Lincolnshire Police, about domestic abuse. So...
You are quite a workhorse, aren't you, Jess?
Yeah.
I mean, that those days just stretch and get ever longer.
Yeah.
You're like Mrs. Incredible, the
elastic
lady.
I never work less than 12 hours in a day, really. Apart from a Saturday, I try and finish by about 3, depending on... Although this Saturday, I've got to go to Glasgow and my son is coming with me solely because it's the Eurovision Song Contest. He wants to watch it. We're going to watch it in the car on the way home. He wants to be with me while he's watching it, so...
That's nice. I mean, the fact that you've got to do it on the fly in the back of a car is quite something. Says a lot about your life.
Indeed.
But also about your relationship with your son. I love that.
Well, Eurovision is like our Christmas and nobody else likes it. My husband and my older son don't like it. So they're bar humbug about it. Even though my older son was born on the day that Eurovision was on and they let my husband stay late in the hospital and they pulled the curtain around us so that, I mean, we could watch Eurovision together. Not that he wanted to, but he was humouring me as I'd just been there.
I mean, I tell you what, Jess, when you look at your Instagram versus your Twitter, two very different conversations, I appreciate. But you don't look like a woman that does... 6 days a week, 12 hours a day minimum. You still look like you manage to have a life. How?
Oh, yeah, I have a life. Yeah. I definitely have a life. I've got, you know, I live in the community I grew up in and all my mates, by and large, one or two of them live elsewhere, but they still come here most weekends. They all just live round the corner. So I spend, you know, at like when I clock off at like 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, I will go and drink wine at one of my mates' houses or watch telly with them. And at the weekends, I try and see my friends on at least one night of the weekends. And my like 7 best girlfriends, all our husbands are friends as well. So we're like, you know, we're just living in and out of each other's houses, really. I don't go out to the pub so much anymore because people talk to me about politics quite a lot when I'm in the pub, and that's a bit annoying.
Busman's holiday.
Yeah, so my happy place is sitting around laughing with my girlfriends. So if I didn't do that, then I'd be very miserable all the time.
I mean, if you looked at your Instagram, it's like looking at one of my friend's accounts. She doesn't make waves in Parliament on a regular basis or represent constituents and literally... pull off the juggling act that you do. You make it look very, very easy. And the other thing that I love is this week, because I've been walking around listening to so many podcasts that you either are hosting or featured on, chatting to my own girlfriends, there's a girl crush thing going on with you, Jess. Women of my age are like fangirling over you. What is it that's got our bra straps in a twist? Because there is that, oh my God, I love Jess Phillips. Have you got a number? Like, no, don't worry. I won't pass it around either, Jess.
I think that is the same with 30 to 40 year old gay men as well. Because I met a load of the people who make RuPaul's Drag Race the other day and they were literally like, oh my God, I love you. Like I was.
Yeah.
I was like that. There's some really famous people at this event. And they were like that. Oh my God, I love you. Which was nice. I think it's just that, I mean, I am very of an era as well. And I know all the cultural references that sort of women in their 40s and early 50s would know. And also I just speak as I find, but also I speak about the kind of things that women care about. And that is refreshing for them but I don't do it in I mean, sometimes I do, but I try not to do it in a way that is dour. I'm cheerful. I try and be cheerful. Yeah. I find being
and humorous and sarcastic.
Yeah,
we don't have enough sarcasm in politics.
just got to take the piss sometimes. Like, that is my love language, to take the mick out of someone. Like, my dad would always say,
love language.
He's only really awful to the people he really loves. Yeah. Like, that is, like, I was raised being able to laugh at myself and laugh at other people. It's like a... And Brummies, we're all a little bit like, oh, well, it'll be all right. We're quite laid back as a people. So, yeah, I think that's probably why. Also, I'm quite tough. I stand up for myself. And I think people think that, like, lots of people are frightened of confrontation and they find it, like, really appealing that somebody's willing to have confrontation. And I'm quite confrontational.
Yeah, and I think you talk about all of the things that we talk about, and you talk about them in the way that we talk about them. So we feel included. We feel like we want to be in your gang, in your corner. I mean, your Instagram versus, I don't even know if she has an account, for example, Pretty Patel's, will be incomparable.
Yeah, no, I'm never pointing at pothole. Like, I don't do that thing where I, like, stand in front of something and pretend that I built it. Politicians are always pretending that they built buildings that they did not build. Why do they feel the need to cosplay? Like I'm going out with the police, must wear police uniform. Like, I go out with the police all the time. I work with the police all the time. I don't need to dress up as a police officer like I'm 5 years old. I just go
one of the village people.
I don't need to wear a hard hat and a high vis. Like, I'm married to a man who wears that every single day of his life. Like, I don't need to pretend that I'm, like, you know, exactly like I'm Bob the Builder.
Well, you don't need to pretend that you're one of the people, because you feel very much like one of the people. Pretty Patel, not so. And I'm just using her as an example, as somebody that holds a very high position in Parliament and possibly could do more to ingratiate female voters to her.
Well, I mean, yes, she's got a long way to go, I'd say. Also, she's a bit awkward. I introduced her to my son, because my son was down in Westminster and he likes to, like, spot the famous politicians. And, like, we'd seen Michael Gove, and I said, this is my son, and Michael Gove chatted with him. And we saw Matt Hancock being pursued on the tube by Piers Corbyn around being all anti-vaccine. And me and my son had basically told Piers Corbyn to do one, and we chatted with Matt Hancock. And then I bumped into Pretty Patel. And I was like, oh, Pretty Patel, this is my son. She totally failed to make any small talk with this teenage boy. I was like that. I mean, just ask him what he's studying at school. You know, like, there's some basic jumping off points, Pretty Patel. Just, and he was like, afterwards, he was like, that was awkward. I was like, yeah, it's awkward.
Now, Jess, I've spent a lot of time reading up on you, listening to you, and observing you, and I've composed what I hope are three questions that will really get your brain thinking. Are you ready to dive in?
Yeah, go for it.
We're living in a time when power and government, which goes unchallenged, is having a devastating effect on the world. And it really reinforces the importance of opposition, why we need people who are there to challenge leadership. You've written a book all about it called Truth to Power, 7 Ways to Call Time on Bullshit. And without challenge and opposition, we lose really important things. We lose the ability to question, change, and hold others to account. But I want to know from you, what have been your own greatest acts of challenge, defiance, and opposition, professionally and personally?
Well, I mean, professionally, it is all entirely, I'd say, the greatest challenge is in the space of men's violence against women. And I'd say it's my greatest challenge because it's also my greatest success.
I was going to say, you've achieved a lot in this space, Jess.
I have, but the challenge I put to myself, I never intended to, I mean, I went to Westminster because of my experience working with victims of domestic abuse, but I didn't expect to, you know, focus quite so much of my energy into it. And I remember sitting through the very first ever, it was either the spring statement, the budget, the autumn statement, whichever one it was, the first ever sort of big financial showcase that I sat through in Westminster. It was George Osborne. And he didn't say anything about women or fund anything to do with domestic violence. And I sat there and I thought, I'm never, ever going to sit through one of these ever again where they don't mention domestic or sexual violence. Every single budget since or autumn statement. And now they just have to do it. Sometimes that you can tell the day before they're scrabbling around thinking, fuck, just find something to say about it. Give me £5 million to give to something. Like, you've got to have something. But I suppose the challenge, so then the challenge that I faced around it was, it's bigger than just that one thing. It was, I have to try and mainstream this into every single political department's mind. Like, I've got to make this a mainstream issue so that they are embarrassed when they forget, rather than just and they do routinely forget violence against women and girls, even in like the Home Office, which is the department that leads on it. They routinely forget it or miss the mark on it. And it's not necessarily in opposition to the government. It is in opposition to society, in opposition to the way that all institutions work, not just government departments, but how local councils work, how your local GP works. It is a huge challenge. And it is very, very challenging to be the person who makes everybody roll their eyes when you say the obvious thing that they knew you were going to say. And it does mean you have to be ever present. You have to, it is a thing about the women's health review, a meeting. I'm like, well, I'm going to have to go, even if I don't say anything, because they'll go like, shit, Jess is here. Remember to say something about violence against women and girls. Like in every, I have to be really, really present in lots and lots of spaces in order that it doesn't get forgotten. And that is really a woman's role in opposition. Is just a reminding people that women exist. It just, your very presence reminds political actors and people with power that women exist. And without that presence, they would just forget. And you can tell so often, the challenge I see all the time is, I can tell so often, it was really obvious in the early pandemic that there were decisions being made in rooms where there clearly hadn't been a single woman in the room. And like, you know, when they gave out all the furlough money and the business grants and things, they like forgot the special inclusion of childcare providers. It was like, hang on a minute, if everybody's just going to suddenly be at home with their kids, like, what about nurseries? And they were like, it's just like nobody had thought about it. It's just like, it was so obvious, you don't have to think about this. It's a bit like when I was a kid and my dad used to say, oh, who bought you that Christmas present? And you'd be like, you did, Dad. And he didn't know he'd bought it for me. Like, it is a bit like, where was the woman in the room who took on the emotional labour of remembering the kids and remembering to do those things? And that was really obvious. So that my biggest challenge always, and it persists, even though I have been relatively successful in some areas, my biggest challenge is always just that, just like, and you get pigeonholed by it quite easily. And some, you know, people who really love me and care about me will say things like, you know, you be careful you don't get pigeonholed. You can still talk about the economy as if women aren't part of the economy. They are.
Or qualified to talk about it.
Yeah, right. I mean, so it's like, part of my degree is in economics. I can talk about the economy. I mean, the truth is I can't really remember anything other than the supply and demand graph. But you can get pigeonholed and people get tired of you saying the same thing over and over again. But politics, really, for any decent politician, the art of politics is just repeating yourself. It's a bit like being a parent.
It is, isn't it?
And eventually your children,
it's a nag.
Do learn,
it's a political nag.
Is your children do eventually learn, like, to like put their shoes away when they're like 30, but only because you said it every single day for the preceding 30 years. And like that is essentially what it is. I had a brilliant young woman come and work on a campaign with me, and she now, funnily enough, she works with me. They often stick around. And we were doing this campaign about setting up a preventative duty so that employers had a responsibility to prevent sexual harassment in the workplace. And she was like, look, it had gone really well. We did this big lobby day, like thousands of people came to Westminster. And like, we were calling on the government to do this thing. And then when they said, oh, we're going to do a review, which is always what the government promises when it wants to kick it into the long grass. And she was like, great, we're going to get a review. They did the review and they sent it back and they basically said, we're not going to do this. And she genuinely couldn't believe it. I said, you've only been at it 6 months. It's going to take at least 7 years. Will we get that? I was like, that, just keep saying it. She's like, is it over? I said, no, we just go back to saying the same thing over and over again. And that is a massive challenge, is basically longevity, staying in and not getting jaded and downbeaten when things take time. I do often feel like that old lady who held that sign and said, why am I still protesting this shit?
Yeah, you probably are, Jess. You should just get a t-shirt with it.
No, I'm just like...
Save you carrying it around, just wear it.
I've been saying this in meetings. If I sit in another... Right, 10 years ago, I sat in meetings where people said, we need to train the judiciary on domestic abuse. And now I'm in meetings where they're saying it. In 10 years' time, I'll be in meetings where they're saying it. It's just like, can we just stop saying it now? Because, oh my God, like, how can we still be saying the same thing and it hasn't happened? You start to go slightly giddy about how, like, things that definitely should have changed have not changed yet.
To keep having the same fight, fundamentally. But you're also not afraid to go. Where you're brave, and I think this is where a lot of the girl crushing comes from, Jess, is that you're never afraid to stand up for what you believe in, no matter how it may damage you. So, you know, as a young MP on the block, you weren't afraid to make yourself unpopular with the Corbynites.
No.
And you spoke out very, very strongly against him. And you, there's one quote I love. You said, I think Jeremy wants to be the leader, but I'm not sure he wants to be prime minister. I worry what he hears when people speak. He and the people around him only seem to hear, you're amazing. Can I have a selfie?
Yeah. I mean, and that is absolutely true.
But it takes guts to say that, Jess. A lot of people think it, but what's it like when you articulate that in a newspaper and then have to walk into a room where they're all there and they've all read it?
Well, to be fair, I wouldn't say anything to a newspaper that I wouldn't say to somebody's face. So he was under no illusion. The very first parliamentary Labour Party meeting that I ever had when Jeremy Corbyn became the leader, and to be fair to him, it wasn't particularly his fault. It was really one of the first meetings I'd ever been in after being elected. And I didn't know that people didn't say what they thought. So I just stood up and I just said, I want you to know that I found this weekend the Labour Party felt like it wasn't a place for women. There was all men on the stage. All men were elected. You know, I just think it's disgraceful. And everybody just sort of looked at me like, oh my God, I can't believe it actually. But then everybody else started it. It's like started a trend. But yeah, like I think it does take guts. And sometimes I have to like dig deep. But often I don't even realise I'm doing it. Often I just think I'm talking like everybody talks. And then people are like, oh, you can't say that. And I'm like, really? Why can't I say that? I can say that, can't I?
Do you get a lot of phone calls, Jess, saying, did you actually say this? Because, you know, you shouldn't have said that. Are you still getting bollocked all these years in?
Not so much now. They just sort of got used to the fact that somebody once said to me in the Labour press office, they said, don't worry, when it's you on the telly, they don't assume it's the Labour line, so you can really say whatever you like. You sort of learned that you earned the reputation of not having to be expected to say anything other than what you think. They were like, don't worry, it won't come back on us because they'll just think, oh, it's that's Jess, that's what she's like. Occasionally people will ring me up and say, did you actually say this? And sometimes the answer is no. Sometimes you are misrepresented or it's taken out of context what you were saying. No, I think that mostly people are sort of used to it now.
Does it get tiring having to be the one that constantly is bombastic, challenging, questioning, unpopular?
It does sometimes get tiring. And actually, this is a problem for women in politics more generally, is that when there is fractions, specifically internal fractions in Westminster and internal fractions within political parties, it is often the women who have to put their heads above the parapet. Because I think that the women are tougher and braver, because to be a woman in politics, you have to be tougher than a man because you face so much more challenge and abuse. But also the risk to the women seems like I couldn't possibly say this, it will affect my career. Whereas women don't necessarily, you know, that they don't think that they're always constantly on a promise like the men do. And so women are often braver. So like in any intervention in the Corbyn years, it was often the women who were sent out batting. And I noticed in the sort of whole porn gate of the Tory MP watching porn Everything's a gate, isn't it? A
lot of gates.
But yeah, the women in Parliament, really, the Tory women specifically in this case, it was they really had to be brave, and they went out and batted collectively with each other. And so, yeah, but it is very, very tiring sometimes when it's just like the same 10 people who have to like be bolshy. And like journalists pick up on it and they will ring you and be like, oh, you must have an opinion on that. And sometimes I'm just too tired. And sometimes I have no strong feelings about things. I'm like, I don't care. Like, I haven't got the energy to be really cross about this today. Like anyone makes any sort of sexist comment in the media and all the newspapers will ring me and say, well, what do you think about Jimmy Carr? What do you think about? And I'm just like, oh, do you know, I don't really care. Like, I haven't got the energy. I'm like, when people stop being raped, I tell you what, I'll get round to people who've said something stupid on a Netflix series. Like, until that point, like, really, I haven't got the energy. So it does get tiring. And like, you know, sort of being painted as being like Mary Whitehouse, like you're going to object to absolutely everything. Like, 9 times out of 10, I just don't have any very strong feelings about most things, like most people.
Do you think that sometimes the way you are and how you are, and that this great authenticity and believability that you have, can also work against you?
Oh, yes.
In terms of progression, yeah, being taken seriously.
Well, yeah, there's the progression thing, but also you expose yourself and wiser people than me. And I would never have managed this because it's just not the personality that I have. But wiser people than me have said, keep your private life private, because, like, you know, actually when the things start to merge into one, it's sort of owned a bit by the public. And that is that can be painful. And yeah, so there is definitely a cost, an emotional cost. You become like a riskier threat. But the truth with me is that no one could ever sell a story on me because I would tell a story. I would just say, yeah, yeah, I've done that. And also, I don't ever leak. I just speak. I just say the things that people are leaking to journalists. I just write it on Twitter. And so in many ways,
and share it, yeah,
just say it, just go out and say it. So in many ways I'm less of a risk, like, because, but I'm held to an incredibly high standard. That's the other problem, is that that being human is meant to mean that, like, you know, I'm going to make mistakes, I do things wrong, just like everybody does. However, when people sort of will wish for you to be, like, you know, the sort of very best, the most honest, the most, like, you are held to a considerably higher standard. So, like, had I done what Matt Hancock did to his family very, very publicly in the newspapers, I mean, A, I'm a woman, so I'd never have got away with it.
I was going to say,
But even so, like, even without that, without the gender element of it, even so, there's just no, like, I am held to a higher moral standard than Matt Hancock, which is, you know, in one respect, good that I'm held to a higher standard. I'm glad I'm held to a higher standard. But in other respects, it means that it's like people are waiting for you to fall.
It's also not fair, is it? We should all be held to the same standards, surely. But I think you're right, Jess, if you'd been caught with your hands down one of your husband's friends' pants during a lockdown.
Who I was paying to work for.
Were they?
Yeah, I mean, if I had six children. No, seven, sorry, seven children.
We're talking Boris now.
Seven children with three different men, one of whom I never saw, and it was very publicly known that I had basically abandoned. I would never have been elected to Parliament, let alone would I ever make it to be the Prime Minister.
Yeah, you work in a really challenging space, Jess. Good luck.
Luckily, I don't have affairs because the disparity is
huge.
Yeah, whilst I do have time to go out and get drunk with my mates, I definitely do not have the energy or bandwidth to have an affair. I mean, honestly.
Why would you want to? You speak so beautifully about your husband, and you say of all the things in the whole wide world that you've been scared of or afraid wouldn't work, he and you and him have never been one of them. He's always been just given.
Yeah. He is my whole life. I love my children because I love them anyway. They've turned into quite interesting characters in their own rights. But, like, I definitely, when they were babies, I loved them because they were his children as well. Like, they were part of him and me. And yeah, no, there's no, I don't ever imagine, I don't ever worry. We don't even have, we have actually once had the conversation about what we, who would have what when, if we ever got divorced, and he just wants the telly. And, but we live very, very separate lives in lots of ways. Like, obviously we don't even live together half the time, which definitely helps. Yeah. Like we live completely independently of each other at the same time as being together, and there's no, it's just not difficult, you know, like when you worry about like people being jealous or like people being like I never feel like I have to explain why I'm late or anything to him. He's just like, oh, I always say to him, do you miss me when I go away? And he's just like, we always come back. Like he's very, very just sort of like or in fact he's got no photos of me on his phone or anything, and I just am like, why don't you have photos? He's like, I know what you look like. He's very, very, I mean, he makes me look like I don't, I'm not straight speaking. He is the most plain speaking human being in the world.
Is he?
Oh my God, it's embarrassing. He will say, you know, when like somebody invites you around for dinner and like you don't want to go, so you make up an excuse about childcare or something or a meeting or a hospital appointment. Like he will just say, oh, we don't want to come. Like, you know, when you bump into someone you haven't seen for ages, and the only way to get out of it, to out of the conversation, is to say, like, oh, we must get together with a for a coffee sometimes. No intention of doing it. He's just, when someone says that to him, he says, we probably won't, will we?
No filter. Just straight from the brain to the lips.
Totally just like, speak as you find. Yes, no, I love my husband. He's an excellent human.
Okay, you ready for your next question?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We've talked a lot about politics and power, and the top job in the land is one that you identified as one you'd like from a very early age. You wanted to be prime minister. So if you ever make it there, Jess, I want to know what the first things you'd do in your first 100 days in office as a prime minister of this country that would honestly make a tangible difference to people's lives.
Well, the very first, and this has definitely changed since I've been a politician. It changes, I suppose, as society changes. But the very first thing I'd do is I would have to have an absolute moratorium on the way that social care for vulnerable adults, children and older people is managed in our country. It is like, you know, that I think it is the greatest challenge. We basically need to invent a new NHS for older adult care and vulnerable and disabled adult care, because it is just absolutely woeful. And so the very first thing I would do is I suppose try and set up I'd like to think that if I was the Prime Minister, that, and I used to bemoan Theresa May for this all the time, is that like she was in a terrible spot where divisions were really rife in Brexit within her own party as well as across Parliament. And I used to just think, pick up the phone and talk to us. Like, never would they, like, in all the time she was trying to get her deal through, she never once spoke to the opposition about what should go in the deal. We could have carried the votes had it been better. But she never once did that. And I used to stand in Parliament and literally just say, those people over there, they're pretending that this is what they're, but they're just trying to get rid of you. They're not honest brokers. Don't listen to those lunatics in your party, Boris Johnson. They're not, they don't have your best interest or the country's best interest at heart. They only have their interest at heart. Give me a call. And then unfortunately, she did actually once give me a call. And I was, when number 10 Downing Street calls you, it says on your phone, even if you haven't saved it on your phone, it says, Downing Street is calling you, 10 Downing Street, like a call from the Prime Minister. It comes through a switchboard.
Does it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It comes through a switchboard. And then they tell you that the Prime Minister wants to talk to you, and then they put you through to the Prime Minister. But when she did call me, I was in a nail salon and she was on loudspeaker. And I just was like, please do not. Don't say any more. You're on loudspeaker. I haven't got any hands. My hands are literally under a UV light. And I was like, I'll call you back.
That's hilarious. So you actually got the Prime Minister on loudspeaker as you're drying your shellacs.
As I'm having my shellac done. yeah, that was orcs. But like, I like to think that if I was the Prime Minister, I would, the very first thing I would try and do is find the cross-party consensus to achieve a thing without it being a political football that it becomes, and everyone calls it the dementia tax, or goes on about how we're trying to take people's houses off them and to pay for it and this, that and the other. I would try, the first thing in the first 100 days would first of all to be to have the meetings to get to the consensus before you start the bill that would make the thing. And that is what I would seek to do. But in the shorter term, I think that I would, the sort of quick things that you could maybe get past quickly is I would equalise men and women's maternity and paternity. I think that men should get the same as what women are offered, because I think that would help the childcare crisis. And I basically want men to be as risky to employers as women. I'm not really doing them a favour.
But also it's about accountability and responsibility. And it takes two people to make a baby. So surely they should both be extended. We can't stand here as women and demand equal rights and then not see that extended by way of return.
Oh, absolutely.
That's not feminism, is it?
100%. And my husband would have taken a year off work had that been available to him. He didn't even get, I mean, he, when my eldest was born, you got 2 weeks off and it was unpaid. It's now not even statutory. And when my second baby was born, it had gone up to being statutory, but it was still only 2 weeks. And now you can share it, but I don't want to share mine. I want my year off with my newborn baby, A, because I've been through a medical trauma as much as anything else. And then I want him to have the year off afterwards and look after the baby on his own. Like that's, and you'd have 2 years paid childcare then. I just think that would, and lots of men want it, but it's just not available to
them. Does that exist anywhere else in the world, Jess?
Sort of.
In Sweden does it now.
Scandinavia, yeah. Fucking Sweden. Yeah. They have everything good.
They get it so right.
Oh, God. It's quite a controlled society, I think, though. Just to slag them off a bit. It's a bit, maybe a bit controlled, but like in Scandinavia, they have like use it or lose it paternity leave.
Yeah.
And they sort of, your benefits are affected if you don't take it. Or your tax breaks are affected if you don't do it. Basically Scandinavia is ahead of the curve. But no, there's no, I don't think there's anywhere where it is like an equal amount. And I would like to see that in the first 100 days. Also, I would start a huge, basically royal style commission into violence against women and girls and all the things that go wrong with it, and stop it just being like sticking plaster policy about refuge or sticking plaster policy. It needs to be complete safety and security, and the way that we think of it is still always about men in Chinooks in uniforms or police officers. Never really includes what safety and security means for women. So I'd have like a women's security commission to basically try and redo every government department and the way that they deal with it. So those are the things I would do in my first 100 days. I also might try and make some funny laws, like anyone who takes a minus offer on the chase has to go into a forced labour camp.
The chase. How the hell do you get the time to watch The Chase?
Because, genuinely, I get up really early. I'm a bit of an insomniac. I get up really early and I will work. I always, and it maybe it comes from going to school, I don't know, I always have a lull at about 3:30, where I basically am useless from like 3:30 till 5. And then I'll like eat my dinner and that, and then I'll do work again in the evening. And I mean, not in the days when I'm in Westminster, I'm just all over the place. But like when, especially when I was working at home, and The Chase is always on Challenge. On a Saturday, you can watch it all day. I absolutely love Tipping Point and The Chase, and I will watch it to recharge.
Have you been on?
No, I would love to go on.
I'm going to message Bradley Walsh straight after this and say, you've got to get Jess Phillips on.
I would totally hustle them, though. I would, like, not do well in the cash builder so that they thought that I wasn't very good at quizzing. And then offer me a massive amount of money. And then I'd be like, oh, boom, I'm really good at quizzing. I love a quiz. Absolutely love it. But, yeah, and Tipping Point, my father-in-law, I mean, he watches it religiously. And so, you know, sort of slightly orcs if you're on your own with your father-in-law. Me and my father-in-law, we just always just watch Tipping Point together. We love it. I mean, who'd have thunk? My husband wants the job. His dream job is being the person who fabricates and manufactures the weird machines that they use on quiz shows. Like somebody had to make a giant 2p push machine. Or that the wall one with, what's his name, Danny Dyer. He's like it's just like, Prom is like that. That's somebody's job. Like, that is somebody's job to make that massive machine. Like, and the wheel and everything. They always know. They have to have some sort of crazy machinery involved. Oh, my God.
Jess, I think for the next Comic Relief or Children in Need, you need to participate on every quiz show.
I can do like a marathon.
There's everything. Yeah.
I'm a quiz show fanatic. My favourite TV shows are really rubbish quiz shows. They're not rubbish, actually. They're brilliant and I love them all. But like, the trashier, the better. The more stupid the premise, the better. I love it. Like, the more stupid machinery involved, I want part of it. But it's much more embarrassing for me not to know the answer. And like, I'd be asked about like a prime minister and I wouldn't know the answer. And then everybody would be like, well, that's shameful. I was an answer on University Challenge, and I didn't get it. My husband got it. He was like, it's you. I was like, oh yeah, it is me.
If you met Bradley Walsh, would it be a minute for you?
I would be very excited. I was at the BAFTAs the other week and The Chase won, and I was like that. I'd not heard of hardly any of the higher brow dramas that were on things, but I was like that. Wow, The Chase! I got really excited.
Fantastic. Well, that takes care of your first 100 days in office. Yeah. I'm happy. Thank you. Right, we're on to our third and final question. I wanted to talk to you about Yours Sincerely, your podcast, which came about after you felt compelled in lockdown while we're kind of in this sea of uncertainty, just lost in life, all of us around the world. You felt compelled to write letters to your own husband and children to tell them what they mean to you. Now on the podcast, you asked your guests to write three letters to three people that mean the world to them. One they love, one that's no longer around, and one very significant person who probably doesn't realise what an impactful role they've played in their lives. So flip, reverse it back to you. I want to know, who are your letters going to be written to, and what have been the most meaningful or significant letters you've ever written or received?
Well, my husband would be the person who means the world to me. And I would write him, a tome about how much I love him. And he's the beginning, middle and end of everything that I am about and have achieved. And lots of people in politics, it's a sort of irritating thing that if you're the husband of a female politician, you get a lot of praise. Because it must be incredibly hard, and he's always like, somebody once said to him, "My wife, your wife, your wife is brilliant, and I know that you know, she wouldn't be able to do it without you behind her. And he was like, my wife's brilliant all by herself, thanks. But which isn't true. I'm touched that he said it, but it's absolutely not true. I'm not brilliant without him at all. I wouldn't have achieved any of the things that I achieved without him. And not just because he's like good around the house and looks after the kids. They're his kids after all. Just because he is a constant solid. He's the constant in my life when nothing else is constant. So I'd write it to him. But if he were to write me a letter, it would literally, this would be the sum total of it. She's all right. He's not loquacious or expressive.
Most loquacious thing he's ever said to you? What's the most romantic line he's ever spun?
When he's pissed, sometimes he gets a bit loving. Genuinely, his romance comes out differently. I wrote once that the most romantic thing he ever did was that I got my period and I'm sat on the loo and I opened the cupboard and he'd remembered to buy Tampax when he did the shopping. And that to me, like, he shows me that he loves me. Like, when he goes out, he'll buy things that he's remembered that I like the biscuits that I like. Like, he will see something and he will remember it and write it down somewhere so that when it's my birthday or Christmas, that this like really obscure thing that I've once said, like, he acts in a loving way all the time. So, but he would be the person who meant the world to me. The person who is no longer here would be my mum. My mum died nearly 12 years ago now. She would be the person who I would write to. But genuinely, there'd just be too much to say. This is a woman I spoke to on the phone every single day of my life until she died. Or saw her 3-4 times a week. She was in my life constantly, and it is like a magnificent political activist. But nothing like me. Like, she wasn't bolshy. She was quiet, and she made people do what she wanted and needed with sort of quiet kindness. Whereas I'm just like, if you don't do it, I'm going to shout at you.
What do you miss most about her, Jess?
Oh, it's funny because people say to me all the time, people who knew her, like, because she was quite eminent and quite a political campaigner, quite a lot of people who I come across knew her. So she gave Andy Burnham his first job, for example.
Did she?
Yeah. And he loved her. Oh, my God, he loved her. And he's always saying to me, it means so much. You know, your mum would be so proud of you. But lots of people say that to me, like, I wish your mum could have seen what, you know, you've achieved. My mum was raised by a single mum in Yardley, and like, for me to represent the area, and my mum spent lots of time working with the previous MPs in Yardley to change laws and things. In the 1970s, I looked through Hansard, and the MP for Birmingham Yardley, my seat now, he mentions her like numerous times. She's mentioned in the House of Commons because she's running various campaigns to sue drug companies. My mum was like Erin Brockovich. But it isn't that I would want to talk to her about. I would just, the thing I miss the most is that she was genuinely sympathetic if I felt ill. Like, in a way that, like, nobody at, yeah. Like...
I don't think Tom's going to give you that, is he?
No, he's just sort of like... I mean, he's very like, look, if you're ill, love, go to bed. He's very practical about it. He's like that, you know, no point pushing through it. Just get yourself to bed. But my mum was like, oh, love, are you all... Like, she was always on my... She was always enthusiastic to hear about big or small, or, like, if I wasn't sure about something with the kids or something. Like, she would just... She wouldn't necessarily know the answer, although she had a lot of sons herself. But she would just listen to me. And I miss that. I miss having somebody who is like definitely doesn't mind you ringing up and whinging at them. Like, she definitely didn't mind. And that is the thing I miss the most. Also, she bought wicked Christmas presents. And for a while, my poor old dad, he tried to, like, you know, do what mom did at Christmas, and now he just gives us money. It's just like, I can't. Like, five little presents, five medium ones. Like when we were in our 20s and 30s, my mum still did that. Still did it with amazingly hard crossword clues. She was very clever, my mum. She was good at quizzing. My God, she was good at quizzing. That's maybe where I get
that's where
from.
It comes from.
But yeah, that's I miss just sort of having that person who you can ring every day and just be, and I do it with my husband when I'm away, but we don't have anything to say to each other. I'm like, oh, how's your day? Just ring in to say hello. And then we go, all right then, see you later. How are the kids? Yeah, they're all right. See you later. Whereas me and my mum would chat, and so I kind of miss that. I miss that. My dad has done a really good solid of being both my parents since then. So it would be my mum who I'd write to. But I don't know. I think I'd just write. Maybe I'd just whinge about the things that are wrong, which is not fair. But too much has happened since she died it would be too much to tell her.
More of a book than a letter.
Yeah, it would be like, oh, and then she'd just slag it off because it would be like one of those awful Christmas letters, which she would definitely have had. Yeah. She doesn't want a blow by blow. She just wants to know how I'm feeling right now. And the person who doesn't know how much they've affected me, I mean, this person is a person who actually does know it because I have told her. Recently, when she said she was standing down from Parliament, and that is Harriet Harman. She literally, Harriet Harman and even Tony Blair, by way of Harriet Harman, they changed my life. And they never knew me or knew anything about me but they knew that there were young women who had babies and needed policy around childcare and needed tax credits to help pay for that childcare and needed, you know, funding for local charities so that they could get jobs and things. There's nothing that I have achieved that I would have been able to achieve had I been 22 with a small baby under this government. Like, it would have been so much harder. I bought my first house. I got my education. I got married, had my children, was a carer for my dying mother, got my first job, all under the last Labour government. And I owe them such a debt for building ladders for me to climb up. And it's because of people, women like Harriet Harman, being the woman in the room. Being like, don't forget the women. Don't forget that some young women have babies. Like, build a Sure Start Centre for those women. Like, that she didn't know me, and she doesn't come from the same background as me. She's fancy. She's from like a manor house. But she cared about girls like me, and she thought that if we were given a chance, we'd take up that chance and offer something back to society. And she was right. So. Harriet Harman is the reason that my children have a better future and have all of the comfort and security that they have, and I owe her a debt that will never be able to be repaid. Also, she just paved the way for women in politics, so in many ways she has totally changed my life and my husband's life and my children's life. And I get to be friends with her, so that's nice.
What did she say, Jess, when you told her what she meant to you and how you felt?
She does that thing that everybody does, saying, oh gosh, it wasn't me, like, oh, there was lots of us involved. And she's just like, actually, I'm really proud of you. And she's very, very sort of generous, but she sort of bats it away as if it's just, you know, run of the mill, that, you know, she massively improved the rights of women for 40 years and gave her whole life to that. That is like impressive. Like, I'm not going to stay in Parliament for 40 years. I mean, she's got a London seat, so maybe it's been a bit easier, but I'm not staying 40 years. I've got max 25. I've been knackered.
You say that.
I can't
see you walking out of this conversation. I can't see you doing it. And do you know what? I really hope you don't, because one day you'll be, or you already are, Jess, somebody's Harriet Harman.
Yeah, that's
you know,
true.
Those ladders, we have to keep them down because the further you climb, the more space there is for other women to come
absolutely.
Up and ride your skirts.
Yeah, when people say it to me, they're like, oh, you've inspired me to do this. I'm like that. Oh, that's nice. I don't know that I meant to, but thanks. You're welcome. But obviously, I spent my whole life trying to inspire people to get involved and do things and like to make sure that women can be. I remember we changed the law about domestic violence victims being able to be directly cross-examined in family courts by their perpetrators. And the week after it had changed, a woman wrote to me and she just said, I just want you to know that I'm the reason that you did this. And I was just like, oh my gosh, because it's sort of like people become academic and they're like numbers on a spreadsheet. There were like 17,000 women.
Stats. Yeah.
Like this woman was just like, oh, by the way, I didn't have to be questioned by my perpetrator today. Thanks. And I was like, oh, look, changing the law. It's like a thing. Like it actually like affects people. Like, that's amazing. Well done, me. It wasn't just me, I have to say.
Well done, you.
It wasn't just me.
That's very Harriet Harman already. It's exactly what she said to you.
It's also true. I mean, like, it's true when Harriet says it. It's true when I say it. But it's the people who, I suppose, take their heads being chopped off who get known, like, for doing the thing, even though there are lots of people involved. It's the people who take all the pillorying for doing that that are the people. So they deserve a bit of praise as well.
As do you, Jess, because you know what? We need women in those. We need you, and we need women like you. And I wish I had the appetite and the energy and the bravery to do what you do. And whilst I don't, I remain incredibly grateful that women like you and Harriet Harman are there. So thank you for your time today, and thank you for your conversation. And I look forward to the day that you get your first 100 days in office. A huge thanks to my guest, the incredible Jess Phillips MP, for joining me on this week's episode. And don't forget, you can listen to her own podcast, Yours Sincerely, out now, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're in the mood for more great chat with fascinating political types from the world of politics and broadcast, have a peruse through our back catalogue, where you'll find equally compelling David Lammy MP, Alistair Campbell, Charlene White, Kate Silverton, Simon Mayo, the poet Lem Sissy, Lorraine Kelly. I mean, I could go on. Fill your boots, my friends. And in the meantime, my thanks to you as always for listening in, to Ben Robbins and the Yahoo Studios team who produced the show with me, to our editor, Anne Diankson, and our music comes courtesy, as always, from Andy Bell. We'll be back next Friday with more great guests. Until then, take care.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Marc Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Marc.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.